So I am Gary Dose. I am, it's called Eating from the Tree. This slide here, it says Gary Does. I asked my son to fix that. My son, I want to thank him. He put this PowerPoint together, most of it. My daughter had some of it. Also, I'm talking about my daughter. She took all my words and my phrases and notes and all my stuff, and she put it in a way where it's hopefully it'll bless you, and really cleaned it up a lot. So anyway, the name Gary Does. Dad, he says, "No, Dad, that's, you need a speaking name." I'm like, "Why? What for? What in the world?" "Well, you just need a speaking name." Well, I said, no, put the right name on there. And it never got on there. So I got a speaking name, Gary Does. And for whatever that's worth, I just left it on there. You know, I think it's kind of funny. Yeah, the last time I spoke was a year ago, so it's not like I'm going to have a big career in doing this, I don't believe. So anyway, we'll get going here. Thank you all for coming. Here's some things we're going to talk about in this breakout session. What are GMOs? Myths and misconceptions. Getting GMOs off the dinner plate. Exploring. The principle of the seed. How we've genetically modified the scriptures. Seed control. And we'll take questions at the end. So please hold your questions until then. And I love to talk about this, so if you want to come with me after class or around the camp or something, we can talk about it then, too. Last year, I presented Living in a GMO World. As I talked with people in the days following the presentation, one of my questions for them was, how can I improve this presentation? One response I heard was, add more Torah. So this year, I'm going to add more Torah. As a farmer, I'm going to approach this from what I do as a farmer, and what I see going on in my world. I have a lot of experience with the area because after getting out of college, I lived out west for 10 years, and that was 1/4 of a mile west of the home farm. Then I moved out east, which was just across the road from the home farm, until I moved into the home farm. So I'm quite familiar with the area, and I've had a part of over 50 crops on our family farm. I will draw on some of this experience in this presentation. I can't begin to cover this topic in 60 minutes and do it justice. So there's a handout up here for your further research. Also, you can get last year's tape titled Living in a GMO World, which is available in the resource room. It has a little more information on it. How many of you know what genetically modified organisms are? Okay, God, move over. Yeah? That's, you know, it's really what it stands for. The thing is, though, that God doesn't move. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So some of the things we're going to talk about today are the effects of man attempt to move God over. And but here in this other world here, GMOs stand for genetically modified foods. It's actually what the word means. It's the changing or modifying of the life form at the genetic level or at the DNA level. We're going to just talk about a few basics here in case anybody's here that don't know what a GMO is. Okay, so genetic modification or genetic engineering is taking the genes from two or more different species and combining them or mixing them. This combination can occur, it can cross kingdoms and natural barriers, such as the crossing of a plant with an animal or the crossing of a plant with a bacterium. The term biotech is an abbreviation for biological technology, which of course refers to the science of genetic engineering or genetic modification. Genetic engineering is a third revolution in agriculture. The first was from horsepower to iron power. The second revolution was from open pollinated to hybrid crops. The third is genetic modification. We're only at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to genetic engineering. I want to make it clear that we're talking about genetic modification here, not hybridization. They're two totally different technologies. In hybridization, we combine genetic material with the same species. This combination can occur naturally without man's influence. In genetic engineering, we mix between different species and between different kingdoms. This is a combination that cannot occur in nature. The new life form that is created reproduces according to its changed DNA, So if a plant is developed that will kill the insect when the insect eats it, the offspring of that plant will also kill the insect that eats it. And it's not something that can be washed off, nor can it be bred back out of the plant. Again, I want to make it clear, we're talking about genetic modification here, not hybridization. In fact, a GMO is patentable. The creator of the life form legally owns and regulates it. The owner can charge a fee or a royalty for someone else to use it. When the patents first come out, some of us farmers said, how can seeds be patentable? It's something God made. And, it's life. How can they patent life? And the issue was challenged in the courts, and the courts sided with Monsanto. Now I understand that they are new life forms, and therefore patentable because they are man-made. In fact, a few months ago I read an article explaining that GMOs are just a step up the evolutionary chain, and that's how the world views them. Of course, seeds are getting better because the world is evolving to a higher standard. Here's the percentage of crops in the USA that are genetically modified. By the way, there's over 170 million acres of GMO crops grown in the United States, making our nation the leader in the growth of genetically modified crops. 95% of the sugar beets in the United States are genetically modified. 93% of the cotton, 93% of the canola, 93% of the soybeans, 86% of the corn, 50% of the papaya, some zucchini and yellow squash have also been genetically modified, and many more crops are under development. For instance, one crop that's been developed but has not yet been released for commercial production is genetically modified salmon. Now, we talked about this quite a bit last year. We're not going to spend much time here now, but here in this PowerPoint, you see a comparison between naturally and genetically modified salmon. This genetically modified salmon is crossed with an eel pout. As you can see, this genetically modified salmon grows a lot faster. Notice, however, that while the salmon that Yahweh created has both fins and scales and is therefore acceptable for dietary consumption, the eel pout that the salmon has been crossed with does not have scales. So if you eat genetically modified salmon, you're going to also be eating this snaky-looking creature that you see here, because a little bit of it's been mixed into it. Now we're going to dig into some of the truths behind GMOs. The world says that they're great and wonderful, but are they really? Please note that I go through this, it's hard to present this information and not sound negative. However, there's a lot of positive things that we can do. There's a lot of hope. Psalms 2, 1 through 4 says, "Why do the heathen rage and when the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against Yahweh and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder, let's cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh, and Yahweh will have them in derision." So we can rejoice because he is God, and that he is in control, not the giants of this land. Yahweh's going to use all this to accomplish his purposes. All we have to do is agree with him. I'm not here to talk about the problems out there in the world. It's my desire to raise awareness to the thing about the GMOs, and I want to raise awareness, and I think I know the solution. And we're going to get to that later here. That being said, let's take a look at some of the popular myths and misconceptions about GMOs. You've probably all heard at least one of these. I think the number one myth is that I hear most often is that GMOs are proven safe and we need them to feed a growing, hungry world. In reality, GMOs are far from proven safe, and Monsanto's claim, along with the other biotech companies, that they're helping the poor and starving world, people of the world, is nothing but a public relations stunt and has no basis in truth or reality. Many intelligent people have completely bought the scam that GMOs are safe and going to feed the world. It's time to stop drinking the Kool-Aid. Studies of GM food have shown tumors, premature deaths, organ failure, gastric lesions, liver damage, kidney damage, allergic reactions, and more. More information, this is on a handout. I got a handout up here. It's got more information on there. I don't have time to cover all this stuff, so we're going to keep moving forward. Do your own research. Don't accept this stuff because I'm saying it. Do your own research and see if there's any validity to what I'm saying here. The genetic modified technology is about profit for those selling it and the chemicals used with it. In fact, there's a yield decrease associated with genetic modification. Increased yields have come from better insect and weed control, not the genetic modification. My own experience, I'm in my fourth year of non-genetically modified farming. My yields have increased, my costs have decreased, my soil biology has improved. My crops take a backseat to none in the area. The grain dust no longer bothers me. Farming non-GMO, my cost of bushel of production has decreased, leaving me with more profit, and I'm able to feed more people. And one of the best things about this is Monsanto gets zero revenue from me. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the applause. I like that too. Now let's talk a minute about how GMOs affect soil biology. A double handful of soil, healthy soil, contains 2 to 3 million microorganisms. The microorganisms are what takes the soil nutrients and convert them into a form usable by the plants. Anything that hinders the microorganisms is going to hinder the growth and health of that plant. In this picture, you can see the soil biology is messed up because the plants look bad. Okay, now this is some pictures of a neighboring farm by me. Now these are long distance pictures. You can't see it very well. These were taken back in like June. And you see the streakiness, unevenness in that soil. And that's excellent soil over there. Very, very similar to a field I've got right north of it. You go to the next slide. And the field across the creek there, across away on the other side of those trees is my field. Same type of soil, same farming practices, except the things that mess up the soil biology. And you don't see this, you see an evenness and a uniformity. In the field on this side of these trees, you can see there, again, some of the stunted plants, stunted areas in there, an unevenness. Again, that's a farmer, neighboring farmer who farms just like most people in the area do. Now these are soil biology problems. It's not all related to GMO. Some of it is anhydrous use and things because, let's go to the next slide. Some of it is anhydrous use and stuff. Okay, this is a common sight in Iowa this year. These streaks here going up and down the hill, they're not row lines. The rows actually run the opposite to these streaks. And the agronomists say that the smaller plants in here, they'll yield about 40 bushels per acre less than the greener strips in here. And now some of this is a result of anhydrous use. Let's go to the next slide. I'll show you a picture of my field that's not you. I don't use anhydrous. I don't use genetically modified crops. But same types of soils and this and that. But see, that's a pretty much of an evenness. If we go a month later, the next slide, we've got these streaks are still showing up. Let's see. Let's go to the next slide. Yeah, this is about a little over a month later. You see the corn starting to tassel. Where it's greener is the smaller stuff, and it's further behind also. So those plants are stunted the entire time, and it's going to affect the yield because the soil biology is messed up. And you go to my field here, the next field here. See, there's my field. Now this is a little later variety corn taken on the same day. It looks a little greener and nicer because it's not yet tasseled. But you see the uniformity. That's what I'm trying to point out here, the uniformity of it. And anhydrous, in the injection zones, it kills all the biology because it's a liquid ammonia is what it is. Now that biology kind of repairs itself over time, but it's damaged. So that's part of what you're seeing here. And it's part of the use of genetically modified. It's part of other issues too. But my question is, how does this type of farming feed a growing hungry world? It's not. And anyway, we got to move on from this. So when these corn plants, when these genetically modified corn plants decay, they go back into the soil, they affect the biology because that plant's an insecticide. In fact, the genetically modified corn is even registered with the EPA as a pesticide. The plant itself is a pesticide. When the plant decays, it returns, the soil biology is affected. It's diminished. And biologically, rich soils are warmer also than biologically challenged soils. So in a cold, wet spring like we had in Iowa this year, we had a lot more of this show up because part of it is a temperature issue too, but the richer soils, the biology of rich soils, didn't have the issues that the other soils had. So, we're going to go on to myth number two here. GMOs are not harmful to the environment. We talked about glyphosate last year. We're not going to repeat much of it, but it's a very commonly used herbicide today, better known as Roundup. Glyphosate is promoted as a very safe chemical, and even a child can purchase it. However, since we've had widespread usage of glyphosate for the past 15 years, we're discovering more about it. Glyphosate breaks down into a substance called AMPA. The half-life of AMPA is 11 to 22 years. We're having a buildup in the environment. Roundup can be found in the air, the water, the blood, the soil, all in increasing levels. The EPA is again proposing to raise the allowable levels of AMPA in the water, the vegetables, the grains. Originally, 0.1 parts per million, that's 0.1 parts per million, was allowable in corn. That was later raised to 6 parts per million, and in 2011 it was raised to 13 parts per million. The allowable levels in soybeans are 20 parts per million. Alfalfa, 400 parts per million. Sweet corn, 3.5 parts per million. Levels in fruits and vegetables have also been raised. I would like to add that most farmers are conscientious about the quality of the food they produce, and they want to be good stewards of the land. But as farmers, we're continually brainwashed with the idea of how wonderful genetically modified crops are. We get brainwashed by all the farm magazines and all the seed companies and all the salesmen and all that, and you hear it over and over and over, and you start believing the lie. I mean, it's just most farmers would be upset about this if they knew the truth of it, and eventually they'll learn the truth of it. A lot of them, our intention is not to destroy the environment. Most of us, anyway, glyphosate is carcinogenic in parts per trillion. So these levels are well beyond dangerous. So much for environmental safety, and let's feed a growing, hungry world. Myth three, genetically modified crops reduce pesticide use. This was true in the beginning, but it's not true today. Insects and weeds have become more resistant, requiring more applications and higher rates of pesticides to be effective. There's a field right down the road from my farm, and it's already had $90 an acre spent on it for weed control. Plus, they paid the tech fee for the use of the herbicide-resistant seed. So over $100 an acre has been spent already for weed control on this farm. That field's like 100 acres big, so it's over $10,000 has already been spent on this field, and you see what the results are here. Such sites are becoming more common. We farmers call these types of weeds super weeds. They're resistant to Roundup herbicide. New technology of dicamba and 2,4-D resistant plants have been developed, and they're set to be released for commercial production in 2014 and 2015 because of these herbicide resistant problems. We need different chemicals to control these resistant weeds, and both of these new chemicals I mentioned are very disruptive to the endocrine and hormonal systems in both plant and animal life. Both herbicides can drift for miles. 2,4-D is what destroyed the vineyards in Iowa, who used to have more vineyards than any other state in the country. We had 2,4-D took care of our vineyards. And 2,4-D is similar to the active ingredient in Agent Orange that defoliated the jungles in the Vietnam War, harming a lot of our soldiers. Pesticide use has increased greatly, and so have the profits for those making and selling these pesticides. So it was true that GMOs reduced pesticide use, but it's true no longer. Okay, another myth, number four here. Genetically technology is comparable to the crossbreeding that our ancestors did to create better crops. Crossbreeding different varieties is low-tech. It can occur in nature, naturally. Genetic modification is done in the lab, and it often crosses different biological kingdoms, such as bacteria and plants, or plants and animals. They cannot cross up naturally, and there are risks of unintended adverse results, which are impossible to ascertain before they're released in the environment. Genetic modification is a very crude science. When the alterations are made, unknown changes also take place. The full results are unknown. Another myth. If FDA and USDA allow them, they must be safe. Yeah. Actually, Monsanto and other biotech companies have close ties with the U.S. government. The FDA has approved aspartame, saccharin, many other food ingredients with bad side effects. The FDA has no longer shown itself credible. I could give you lots of examples, but for time's sake, check out the handout. Myth number six, there's no nutritional differences. In reality, a 2012 nutritional analysis of genetically modified versus non-genetically modified corn showed shocking differences in nutritional content. Non-GM corn contained 437 times more calcium, 56 times more magnesium, at the next screen up there, 7 times more manganese than non-GM corn. Genetically modified corn also contained 13 parts per million of glyphosate compared to none for the non-GM corn. There's a reason why many European countries have banned the planting and importing of GM grains. Now you can't probably read this, but, well, you can a little bit. But there's one testing that's been done. There's not a lot of testing been done. We're going to talk about that why is later. There's a reason why many European countries have banned the planting and importing of genetically modified grains. There is a reason why livestock feeders pay a premium for non-GM modified grains and feed. There's a reason why my neighbor wants my corn stalks for his cattle. Cattle and other livestock are healthier when eating non-GM. Myth 7, GMOs are impossible to avoid. GMOs are found in over 70% of processed foods. Avoid processed foods and you avoid much of your GMOs. It's true you will not be able to avoid GMOs 100%, but you can take a step up the ladder and avoid most of them. Myth number 8, non-GMO food's too expensive. I contend that what's too expensive is poor health. Also, there's economic options to buy non-GM food. I'll present a couple of ideas here. Develop relationships with local farmers. Join a food co-op or a buying club. Get together with others and buy bulk. Don't buy packaged food. Packaged food is expensive and generally contains lots and lots of undesirables. Okay. Numerous states have held referendums to mandate the labeling of GM food, GM products. California Proposition 37 was a referendum to mandate the labeling of GM foods. The biotech industry spent $46 million to push a no vote, and the grassroots support spent about $9 million. It was narrowly defeated last year. Vermont recently passed a bill in support of labeling, but it doesn't go into effect until four other states pass it. This year, the U.S. Senate, can I have just a little more light here? The U.S. Senate overwhelmingly voted 71-27 against a GMO labeling amendment to the Farm Bill. There's a powerful agenda present in the chemical, seed, and biotech industries to defeat labeling of GMOs. That's good. Thank you. I believe that if a state were to pass mandatory labeling, the federal courts would overturn it. I think the federal courts would overturn it. It would hinder commerce and therefore be unconstitutional under the Commerce Clause. I'm not an attorney or a legal scholar, but I see what the federal authorities have done in other states when a state law violates their agenda. Arizona passed an immigration laws and requirements to show ID before voting, and the feds struck down both laws. Gun freedom in Montana was banned. Several states, including Iowa, did not want homosexual marriage, but it was reinstated by the courts. I don't think voting's going to work. Saying that, I'm not against voting, and I would vote for mandatory labeling, given the opportunity. Labeling does raise awareness, but it does not stop genetic pollution. It doesn't protect naive consumers, and it doesn't replace long-term testing. A much more proven and effective way is to stop purchasing GM foods. Ask grocery stores and restaurants, etc., if their food contains genetically modified ingredients. Ask them to offer non-GM choices. Business owners don't want you to walk out of their store empty-handed. You will probably never be back. If they don't know about genetic modification, briefly educate them. Exercise restraint. One or two sentences should be enough to let them know you want non-GM choices. They have a job to do and you don't want to come across as an extremist to them. If they want more information, then give it to them. Consumer rejection carries a lot of weight. Studies show that consumer rejection, a level as small as 5%, will change the industry. Proof is in the consumer rejection of RBGH milk. RBGH free milk is now widely available. Okay, here's some examples of products with large writing on them. But you've all probably seen that, what it says on there, no genetically modified products, and no high fructose corn syrup, this sort of thing. Again, there's a market for this, a growing market. So you'll see this fairly common now, and we want to make it more common. Also, you look for the non-GMO product verified seal, or the USDA organic seal on the label. If the product is not labeled non-GMO or organic, then it probably does contain genetically modified ingredients. There's a growing demand for GM-free foods. Whole Foods recently announced they will require labeling of GMOs on all their products by 2018. Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Aldi's have all stated they will not carry GM salmon. The best source for non-GM food is to buy it local or grow it yourself. If you don't know who raised the food, you really don't know what is in it. I've talked with organic inspectors who won't eat organic food that's been imported. It may or may not be organic. It's easy to jump through the hoops in some of these foreign countries and qualify as organic when it really is not. Eat local. Know your supplier. Develop relationships with growers or grow your own. Develop communities where wholesome meat, milk, grains, etc. are available. On the Dose Farm this year, we had a sweet corn day. 14 families got sweet corn. And we had a lot of fun together. And non-GM food shouldn't be expensive. My cost of production is less than with genetically modified crops. The increased costs come from the middleman. When we buy GM foods, we vote for and we support the genetic modified industry. Is that what we want to do? Okay, after all this about GMOs, you may be wondering if Torah has anything to say about this. Let's take a look at Leviticus 19:19 and Deuteronomy 22:9 and 10. Okay, parts I want to point out here in the red, they're highlighted, you can read them yourself here, but I want to, thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed, okay? I want to examine these verses from a Hebraic view of what does it do and what I see in my interactions with these. What does sowing your fields with diverse seeds mean? Does this mean you shouldn't plant tomatoes and cucumbers side by side in your garden? What do you see in nature? Yeah, I've got some forested land, and what I see in it is diversity. Now, you can't really see all the different individual trees there, but there's oak trees out there, and walnut trees, and elm, and hackberry, and walnut, and there's all just a cottonwood. There's just a sprinkling of different trees out there. They're all randomly growing together. And this is native. This has not been planted by man. It's just what grows. In the understory, there's various bushes and vines and a multitude of different herbs and grasses. Everything seems to get along just fine together. You can look around out here and you'll see it. You'll see a diversity in the trees and in the grasses and in the understory. Here's a picture of some berries I picked, standing all in the same spot, not moving. I reached a ways. There's mulberries and there's wild raspberries, there's gooseberries, there's honeysuckle berries here, just diversity is what I'm trying to point out. There's diversity. We would maybe call that mixture, but it's what I want to say. I think it's diversity. The diversity is also represented in the animal kingdom, where there's squirrels and rabbits, deer and turkey, raccoons, as well as other wildlife, and they all seem to get along just fine together. I see no problem with this diversity growing together. What I don't see is the rabbits and squirrels interbreeding and producing seed. I don't see the oak trees and the walnut trees mingling their genetics. Although the squirrels like the walnut trees, I don't see them mating with them. They know better. The seed or the instinct within them is programmed not to do that. There's built-in safeguards between species so that they cannot share their own genetics, at least not outside a laboratory with man's intervention. The Garden of Eden had different trees and herbs in it. I think the mingling of seed had to do with genetic engineering in a way that Yahweh never intended. Deuteronomy 22:9 speaks about mixed seed. Okay. We had that slide up there. I don't know if it's up there again. Okay. The next verse talks about plowing with an ox and an ass together. Okay. The location and the instruction in the Torah brings clarity to the application of that instruction. So I think that verse 10 helps bring clarity to verse 9. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the two animals being near each other. The problem is what they are doing together. In working together, they're unequally yoked. It would be abusive to both animals to work that way. You know, look at those around the camp here. We've got a lot of diversity here at camp. We've got all different, we've got young and old, we've got different, some wear head coverings, some don't, different kinds of head coverings, different kinds of tzitzits and different lengths, and some no tzitzits, and there's just lots and lots of diversity. And I think diversity is good because we're in unity with the Creator of that. See, we're doing things His way. What we're doing together is in unity. I think we've got to separate between diversity and unity. And in nature, when it's all in unity, the way He's designed it to do, it's not what they're calling here mixture. Anyway, coming back to the seed, what does the seed do? What's its function? Its function is to produce a plant, bears fruit and seed. And if the seed is mingled with genetic material from another species, the offspring will be mingled and a new life form is created, not by Yahweh, but by man. Mingled seed is not to be planted. If not planted, then it would not bear fruit, and of course, it would not be available to eat. He doesn't want us to eat of it because it wouldn't be good for us. He's our Father. We are His children. We are not the adults of Israel. We're the children of Israel. He loves His children. He wants what's best for His children. He instructs us in what's best. In His wisdom, He knew that His creation was going to mingle the seed thousands of years in the future, and He told us not to do that. So, why is it so important not to mingle the seed? And what does the seed represent? Okay, let's look at the principle of the seed. Here's a seed. What kind of seed is it? Kind of a guess, isn't it? Here's the fruit from that seed. Well, what kind of fruit is that? See, we know that fruit contains a seed, this one here, because we see the fruit. But the seed is hidden. You only see the fruit. By seeing the fruit, you know what seed's in it. When this seed is planted, what will it produce? You know, more of itself. It will reproduce after its kind. This is how Yahweh programmed it. Seems pretty simple and straightforward, doesn't it? This is one way Yahweh teaches His children in ways we can understand. When speaking of people, He says that you will know them by their fruits. The seed which is hidden in a man is unseen, but it's revealed by their fruit or what they do. The natural reveals the spiritual. As you see the fruit unfold in a person's life or a system or a concept, it's a pretty good indicator of the spiritual seed that's contained therein. So do GMOs have a spiritual significance? Okay, 1 Corinthians 15:46 talks about, however, that which is not spiritual, was first was spiritual, but that which was natural, and afterward that which is spiritual. First comes the natural, then comes the spiritual. Yahweh teaches us things in the natural so that we can better understand the spiritual counterpart. Everything in the natural has a spiritual counterpart. The spiritual and the natural are separate, but they're both always present. Romans 1:20 is the second witness of this. He says here that the invisible things, the spiritual, is revealed by the things that are made, the natural. There's a mysterious connection and parallelism between the physical and the spiritual, the earthly and the heavenly, the tangible and the intangible, the seen and the unseen. What we see is in the natural, yet it came from the spiritual. The natural has been created, the spiritual has always existed. The Word was with God before the beginning of the physical universe. I like to think of it as a pair of railroad tracks. They go in a circle, as God's plan is circular. They're distinct from one another, yet they come from the same beginning, they follow the same path, and they arrive at the same point, at the same time, on the same ultimate goal. We, being in the physical, are in the center of that circle, and all we see is the inside pair of tracks, the physical ones. Scripture says that at the mouth of two or three witnesses shall the matter be established. That's 2 Corinthians 13:1. Yahweh, one of the things that's great about Him, He keeps His own instructions. It is His character to do so. These verses He doesn't expect us to do something he doesn't do. He's a father. Okay? So it's a good example for his children. Now, these two verses, 1 Corinthians 15:46 and Romans 1:20, are two witnesses to the natural and the spiritual. The natural and the spiritual are two witnesses to his creation, his fingerprints on his creation. Through this understanding, there should be a spiritual parallel to the GMO seed. So what is the spiritual seed? Luke 8:11 says that the seed is the Word of God. The Word is the spiritual food that you consume. Just like we need physical nutrition, we also need spiritual nutrition. In the physical, there's both clean and unclean foods. His people were to only consume the clean. Likewise, there's both a clean and unclean spiritual food. The pure and true instructions and teachings, there's both that, and then there's teachings that are mixed, such as the doctrines of Balaam. The doctrine of Balaam was to entice Israel to sin by mixing with the Moabite women and worshiping their gods, thereby mixing the worship of Yahweh with the worship of other gods. In genetic modification, we cross between seeds and even between kingdoms. This is in the natural realm. In the spiritual counterpart, we have the kingdom of Yahweh and the kingdom of darkness. The mixing of these two kingdoms is what Balaam did. It brought death to many of Yahweh's people. Yah's instructions lead to life. All others lead to death. Okay, here's a DNA strand. It contains instructions for life. I like to compare DNA to Torah. The Torah, or the spiritual seed, contains instructions of how to produce life. Let's say there's 613 genes on its strand. The Torah instruction genes reveal the character of Yahweh. John 1:1 says that the Word was God. When you alter the genes, you add and subtract from the Torah, the expression of life is changed. Our understanding of Yahweh is changed, and how we perceive Him changes. The Word of Yahweh is instruction for life, just like the genes give instruction for life. Change the gene and you change the organism that's created from that gene. Change Yahweh's Word and change your life, because one does what he believes. Yahweh's Word brings life. Change His Word and you have death. Deuteronomy 30:19 says, "Behold, I set before you today both life and death, good and evil." That's the wrong. It's supposed to be 30:19. We never got that one fixed. You all know the verse. "Behold, I set before you this day both life and death, good and evil. Choose." Choose which way you're going to go. Isaiah 8:20 says, "If they teach a false law or instruction, there is no light in them." So if our food contains genetic instructions that Yahweh didn't put in there, is there life in it? Is there, life, full life in that? The fruit from that seed may look good, but is it really good? It might look good on the outside, what we see, but is it? Is the seed of it good? Natural gene transfer is called vertical transfer. Okay, it's parent to child. It's what Yahweh designed. Genetic modification transfer is called horizontal transfer. One life to another life. It's what man creates. The Torah teaches creator to created, and the created can never be greater than the creator. Whereas genetic modification teaches that the created can now be, we can become the creator. Some say genetic changes are so minor it really doesn't matter. The item is still 99% the same. I want to tell you a story about that. Johnny the teenager wanted to go to the movies. His mother didn't give him permission because the movie had bad content. Just a little bit. Johnny protested. He said, "Mom, most of the movie is good. It just has a little bit of bad in it. This is not fair." The next day, Johnny's mother made his favorite snack for him, oatmeal raisin cookies. As Johnny started to get some of his mother said to him, "Oh, just one thing. I put a little bit of our sheep feces in the cookies. But don't worry, they look like raisins, and the other 99% of the ingredients are very good and very nutritious." Johnny got the point. Just like those oatmeal raisin cookies, I believe that the tree of knowledge of good and evil was mostly good, but it was mixed with deceit and evil. Yahweh's word is pure and 100% true. That's the tree of life. Hasatan mixes Yahweh's truth with deceit. That's the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Got one more example I'd like to give about the ramifications of mingling seed, and it's all near and dear to us. Hope I offend nobody. 2 Corinthians 11, 3 and 4, I don't think we have a slide on that one. It warns us about those who preach another Jesus. Okay? It has to do with that. So I don't think we have that slide. Okay, many of us have different conceptions. Many people have, about who and what Jesus is and what he came to do. Now, most of us here are probably pretty unity about that. But out there where we came from, some people believe he's a prophet among prophets. Some believe he's an angel. Some believe he's a good man. Some believe he had a daughter and produced children, you know, the Da Vinci Jesus, you know, and then the Islam Jesus, you know, the prophet among prophets. And, you know, there's all these Jesuses out there. So others think he came to do away with the law. Some think he came to do the Father's will. You know, man's tendency is to craft a God after our own image. So many people base their view of Jesus based on what they want him to be. So if we go by what we want or what is in our heart, that makes Jesus a creation of our own image. What we want him to look like. So, and there we have it, a genetically modified Jesus, I call him. This one that's not the same seed as the Father. Might be a lot of similarities, but it's a little different. And there's lots of them out there. Another text in Matthew 24, I believe, talks about many false Christs, you know, are going to come along, you know. And there's different ways to look at that, but you know, there's a lot of different versions out there. You know, a big one's the abstract Jesus. You know, he's the one that's just—it's just whoever. You know, it's just, well, if he's that way for you, it might be. I might be a little different. I understand it this way. It's just all good, though. It's all good. And there's the one that's in our heart. You know, it's like it's just the Jesus in our heart. Well, that, you know, there's all these different versions. Anyway. Got to move on here. But how do you determine who's the real Jesus? What's the real deal? Again, we need to examine the scriptures and look at the genetic instructions contained in Torah. And that's how we know. Hopefully you can see how important it is not to alter and change Yahweh's word, his seed. We spent some time on the spiritual application for this, and now I want to talk about how the principle of seed is manifested in the physical. Years ago, I heard that certain forces were going to control the seed in the future, and you won't be able to get seed. Terminator seeds would be created, so you would have to buy seed every year. These people said you may not even be able to get seed. I dismiss these people and their opinions as conspirator believers, alarmists, overreactors. Well, seed control is here. Here's a seed technology agreement that every grower who plants genetically modified seed from this company must sign. You probably can't read it, but that's okay. I got to squint pretty hard to read it myself. And anyway, this genetically modified seed is patented, so those that hold the patent can protect their creation. The Creator wants to protect his creation. That's biblical. I think just like a parent's supposed to protect his children, you're supposed to look after what you create. And Yahweh, hopefully, will look after what he creates, right? So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this because it's their creation. I'm okay with this. But the problem is that the seed company I have been doing business with for 36 years demands that everyone must sign this agreement. Even those like me who don't want the genetically modified seed. I don't want the technology. Okay? Here's some of the terms and conditions of the contracts that if you have to agree to. Well, you agree to it unless you sign it. You can't use the seed for research purposes. What constitutes research not defined. So it could cover, who knows, it could cover anything. It's difficult to do analysis on genetically modified crops and feed trials and different things like this. And like that nutritional comparison that we did, or that we showed, because of this term of the contract. Signing the contract gives them the right to enter, inspect, and sample the fields, equipment, the bins, the storage areas, work areas, etc. They will attempt to provide notice first, but no notice is required. Is there a visual on this? I believe there is. Okay, here's my grain bins. They can do whatever they want there. I don't even have to know about it. The next slide. The combine, they can inspect that. They can inspect. There's a planter out here, isn't there? They can inspect all this equipment, buildings, on. They, it says in the agreement they will attempt to provide notice first, but no notice is required. There's marketing restrictions. They're undefined. They can change the terms of the contract at any time. They don't even have to give notice. Now, at least credit cards, they have this language in their term, in their agreements, but at least they have to give notice. Under this one, they don't even have to give notice. This agreement goes on indefinitely. My signature binds everyone involved in this mess. My landlord, my co-op, everyone. And my question is, how can my signature bind all these other people? Anyone involved in the growing of the crop, my signature binds all them people. If I accidentally breach any of these terms, all the legal expenses are guess whose? You know, they're my expenses. I can't replant the seed. Okay, that's another term. I can't replant the seed. This clause functions in the place of the terminator gene. You see, the technology exists to put the terminator genes into the seeds, and that was attempted, but it was objected to. So this technology agreement serves the same purpose. So you can't replant the seed. Seed companies are forcing this contract on people like me who don't want the GM seed. All I want is the same non-GMO seed that I've gotten for the last 4 years. I didn't change anything. They changed. That system changed. Something's going on, see? If I were to sign this agreement, I'm creating liability risk and financial responsibilities that don't apply to me. All these statements in this contract could work against me. What if they were to find biotech crops on my land? I know I have some because of pollen drift. I can't help it. Genetic pollution is a widespread problem. For instance, this summer, genetically modified wheat was found in a field in Oregon. Japan and South Korea stopped imports of U.S. wheat. They've since resumed imports, and the incident is under investigation. This wheat was an experiment that had not been released for commercial production. It had not been grown since 2005. How did it show up 8 years later? No one seems to know. Okay, so I'm going to make this clear. I don't want the technology. I'm not against signing an agreement, but I don't want all these terms that don't apply to me. I don't want that. And again, I didn't change anything. I'm just wanting the same seed, and so far I haven't been able to get it. I've met with people, the head guy in the state of Iowa, so I've gotten that far up the ladder, and still no results, positive results. Okay, in Europe, this is going on here. Biotech companies are being granted patents on natural crops such as broccoli. You can read more about it in the handout. Monsanto and others have been feverishly filing for patents on all sorts of natural crops and beyond the genetic crops, modified crops, the natural crops. To take this concept of the seed to another level, I want to tell you about a beaver. Yeah, there you go, cute little thing, isn't he? Okay, I have a pond, and I have a beaver in that pond. And that beaver has all the water it could ever need, yet it continues to dam up the overflow, and I don't want the overflow plugged up. I keep unplugging the overflow, and the beaver keeps plugging it up again. It won't obey me. You see, that beaver has a seed in it, an instinct, a program. Maybe it's the law of the beaver, which is written on his heart. The beaver can't help but to chew down trees and haul mud, make bigger dams, even though he doesn't need a bigger pond. Humans, also follow after the seed that is within them. Just as a beaver wants to make bigger dams, the righteous want to do works of righteousness. And the wicked want to do wickedly. Proverbs 4:16-17 says here that the wicked, they rest better at night if they somehow express their wickedness. Okay? I bring this up because I see another aspect of seed control going on in the natural. Again, what is the seed? Luke 8:11. The seed is the Word of God. It is the Word of God. Well, what is the Word of God in a beaver? It's his instinct. It's how God instructed the beaver to live. It's what they do. Animals are governed by instinct. Man is of a higher order of creation. Yahweh gave man dominion over the animals, and he gave mankind choice between life and death, good and evil. Control of the seed is done under the pretext of good, and it desires to cloak or hide the evil. I'm going to give a few examples of seed control. Okay, I don't know if you knew it or not, but the FDA is trying to outlaw chickens from being allowed outdoors. Now, egg-laying chickens running free, they're trying to make this illegal. These chickens running outdoors here. It's not good. They don't have it yet done, but they're trying. Okay, the chickens, what are they designed to do? They're designed to go out and forage, eat bugs, eat grass, and scratch, and do all that stuff. Here's what the modern way of farming is, and these all these cages and big building and everything like that. And this is what they want to make legal and the other illegal. These chickens don't get to do what they've been designed to do. They don't get to express the seed that Yahweh put in within them. Okay? Also, which egg would you rather eat? You know, from here or from the factory ones? Okay. Another example is rainwater. Man's been collecting rainwater on their own property for thousands of years. What does rain do? One thing, it nourishes plants, people, and animals. Three states have made it illegal to collect rainwater on your own property. Yeah, I can't, you know, it's hard to believe that. But the seed is controlled by not allowing it to receive water. Another example is milk laws. Okay? Raw milk is a complete food. It's live food. You know, pasteurize it, now it's dead. The life or the seed in it's destroyed. It looks like milk, tastes like milk, but it's not live milk. Sprouts, I understand, are really, really hard to get out there anymore because they're... But sprouts are extremely good for you. It's a live food, but it's getting really hard to get them. Regulations. Why? Okay, that's, we're going to get to that. Why? Many small farmers who provide fresh, healthful food to others are being targeted and prosecuted by state regulatory agencies. There's an agenda by government and big business to interfere with your right to access pure food from the producers of your choice. While state officials try to make it sound like they're protecting the public from unsafe foods, they're instead keeping wholesome food out of the hands of the families that wish to purchase and consume them. The local farmer-to-consumer model, the model from the beginning, is not beneficial to big corporations. This is nothing more than shutting down the expression of the seed under the guise of protecting the public health. Another example is like fluoride. You know, there's fluoride to water all over, and most of it gets watered to lawns, flushed down the toilet. Very little bit gets consumed actually and helps your teeth, so to speak. You know, what's the big deal? You know, what's the big push behind altering, you know, the life in the food and stuff? You know, it's this craziness. You know, some of this stuff, and what's going on? And you know, here's what I think's going on. We've inherited lies from our fathers. According to, I don't remember the scripture verse on that. So what's the scripture say? For generations, we've ate spiritual food that's been derived from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Hey, I understand there's like, now there's 38,000 different menus on the buffet table of different spiritual food out there. You know, we can vote till we're blue in the face. You know, it's not going to change a whole lot. I don't think. Not for the better anyway. I think the solution is to return to the Torah of Yahweh. Okay, to the pure word of Yahweh. You hear it and do it. That's our solution. I'm encouraged by all the people here that I meet. They're really interested in what they eat. You know, they're careful about what they eat. They eat different from the world. It's the natural reflecting the spiritual. Because you're here because you want true, real food. You want real spiritual food. You want real, true teaching from the scriptures, unadulterated. And see, it flushes out in the natural in what you eat and what you do and the activities you involve yourself with. As we return to Torah, we're gonna get rid of FDA. We're gonna get rid of all this, or they're gonna make allowance for us. You know, we're gonna. That's their solution. Return to Torah. Mark talked about it yesterday. You know, with the youth, bring up this next generation. I think there's a lot of future for the next generation. There's a lot of future in returning back to the way it was, the way we had it. There's a lot of opportunities out there in agriculture, and in other things, or we can return to our roots. And there's more and more people coming into Torah. There's more and more people going to want the real deal. And that's exciting. Exciting times we live in. Anyway, I got to keep moving here. Okay. There's a large and growing movement to control the seed. This is in the physical. So what's going on in the spiritual? Again, the seed is the Word of God. Luke 8:11. The purpose of the seed is to bear fruit. The disciples got in trouble for speaking forth the word. So did Elijah and Isaiah, and Jeremiah. What about the blind man who was healed by Yeshua? He got in trouble for speaking the truth about Yeshua and spreading Yahweh's seed, didn't he? What about the hate laws we have here? Military chaplains that are being restricted in what they say. Religious leaders being restricted on, you know, to only speak the words that agree with your denomination. No prayer in public schools. The taking down the Ten Commandments. Are not all these examples of seed control? Have you ever gotten into trouble with anyone for speaking and doing his word? In other words, planting his seed. You know, tares try to keep the wheat from coming to maturity and bearing seed. And they try to restrict us from speaking forth the truth. You know, even though we're facing these challenges, we need to remember His promises. One of them is that His seed, or His word, will accomplish what He sent it for. It's an eternal seed, and His word will not falter. We have an opportunity to agree with Him. In other words, plant His seed. The promise is that the seed will reproduce. This demonstrates Yahweh's faithfulness. He said that there will always be a seed time and a harvest. The seed bears fruit. He sends the rain and the sun, and He supplies the nutrients. Isaiah 40:68 says, "The grass withers and the flower fades, but Yahweh's word endures forever." 300,000 farmers signed that technology agreement. A handful of us didn't. From what I understand, I think there's more than that, but that's what I understand. I didn't, and as it stands right now, I can't get the seed I want. Am I worried? You know, in light of all His promises, you know, I just got done stating, how in the world can I be worried? He will turn this challenge into a blessing as long as I agree with Him. And I encourage you all just to go out, when you go back out, you know, in here to agree with Him. Doesn't matter if you like it or don't like it. You agree with Him. And another thing I'd like to say is we can do it with boldness. We've got nothing to hide, and we can go forth with boldness and spread His seed. So, anyway, I got to sum it up here. We're running out of time. Our need for a Savior is pictured in the prodigal son. Yahweh planted good seed in him, but he did not appreciate it, and he went off to mix in the world around him. The world looked good, and it had good things to offer him. It also offered him evil things. He sought prosperity and friendship, and he found himself alone and starving. He came to his senses and returned, and he repented to the Father. And the Father restored him. The Son needed a forgiving Father, and the Father rejoiced at his return. In a sense, we were all genetically modified in the garden when we ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What happened to man in the garden is now what man is doing in the seed of all other life. The seed bears fruit and multiplies, doesn't it? In Romans chapter 7 and 8, Paul says, "I delight in the Torah of God, but in my flesh I do the Torah of the flesh." So like the prodigal son, we need restoration. And for that we need Messiah. We are a product of the world system and the religious system. Some good seeds and some bad seeds. The tree of good and evil. We face a lot of giants in the land. They say we can't keep the commandments. You know, they're right. You know, we in our own strength, in our sinful state, we will never be able to keep the commandments to the level that He intends without His help. Yahweh says that where you are weak, I am strong. You know, we absolutely need Yeshua. You imagine we're climbing a ladder. You know, we can start out our children and grandchildren on a higher rung than we started. You know, let's not criticize people on a lower rung than we are, or yourself for not being up higher. We just try to get people to the next rung. That's our job. Someone else may be designated to take them to the level above that. He's calling you to a greater place, the tree of life. So which tree will you eat from? Next slide, please. I just love this next slide. It shows here the instructions for life, the DNA coming up from the scriptures. And the other side, same kind of thing coming up out of a man's hand. And says a lot to me, that picture right there. So anyway, thank you very much for coming. I'll take questions now. Please limit your question to a question. And no speeches or anything like that. And we'll start right in front here. Yes, ma'am.